You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora te whānau, e whakarongo ana koutou ki te reo irirangi, ewa te kaumarema BFM. My name is Rachel, you're on the 95BFM Breakfast Show, and on the line from down in Otatahi Christchurch, we have got Associate Professor Dr. Amy Fletcher, who is working in the Political Science Department at the University of Canterbury and is an expert in American politics. Morena, Amy, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. This is a very, unusual time for politics in America. But how did we get to this point where we're seeing pro-Trump insurrectionists in the Capitol building? This is a pretty remarkable moment in history. How did we get here?
Well, I think we got here for a variety of reasons. Obviously, Trump has been divisive from the beginning. I would also argue that the institutions of American democracy have been weakening for some time. The fact that we're in such a divisive moment is characteristic of a country that's been moving towards the brink for quite some time. I do think Trump and his style, his rhetoric, the increase in the partisan bickering and anger, much of this has been amplified by the media, and then we've layered the COVID-19 crisis on top of it. And quickly, I'm also study health and history, and if you look back at things like the bubonic plague, we're not that different from people several hundred years ago, and I think the stressors of how bad COVID-19 has been over this past year in the United States have made the country quite fragile at this moment.
So this is, as you said, this is something that's kind of come out of a contemporary moment. We've had all these immediate factors build up to this breaking point, I guess. But this has a long history as well. There's been quite a bit of commentary about people being shocked but not surprised by what's happening. What were some of the long signs that has led up to this point that we've got to in history?
Well, I take Trump quite seriously, and I do think his rhetoric has been very dangerous. And I do agree with many critics that it almost felt, though, inevitable that we've been in almost sort of a movie. And as you saw the continuing claims about election fraud, you saw the bringing of people to the Capitol with the express purpose of getting them very fired up as a crowd. You look at some of the rhetoric from Giuliani and Trump. And yes, it almost seems, while I do take this very seriously, I'm not minimizing it in any way, it almost feels like the culmination of a movie script, that we knew that something was going to have to break, and the tensions did yesterday. And I think, while I still think he has to be held responsible for that rhetoric and for firing up the crowd in the way that he did, it almost seems that even Trump is a bit chastened.
That's an interesting observation.
How far it went yesterday.
So do you think this has kind of gone beyond the point of the Trump machine, I guess? This is part of a bigger movement or context here?
Well, I think we have to remember, to be fair, there were, to my understanding, about 250,000 people that turned out for that rally. And while many people may disagree with their politics, as in most cases, it was a subset of that much larger group that stormed the Capitol. But yes, for that group, it looks like early reporting from the states is beginning to suggest credibly that many of them have been affiliated in the past with several of the alt-right groups. They are quite prominent in their, hard right and beliefs that somehow the election has been stolen, that America is on a wrong track, and they use a sort of rhetoric that's quite indicative of the alt-right and possibly some proto-fascist views. Now, that, again, wasn't everyone on the Capitol grounds that day, but that mob does seem to have some prominent figures within the alt-right included in it.
And when you're talking to as many people as someone like Trump, specifically Trump in this instance, can reach, you are always going to have these I guess, the hardest line, the most extreme listening to you as well. What ways can Trump and his administration be held accountable for this? And do you think that they will be?
I think that is a very interesting question, because one can understand the rage. There are already several prominent Democrats and at least one Republican calling openly for Mike Pence and the Senate and Congress to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office immediately on the grounds that he is not fit or capable of carrying out the duties of president. So there are some who want to take the most serious measures to remove him. He certainly could be open to criminal liability, accusations, and court cases when he's left office. With only 2 weeks to go before the inaugural, we certainly can't allow that sort of sedition to happen again. But I can also see the voices that are arguing, not in any way to forget what happened yesterday, but it may be time to start focusing on the incoming President-elect Biden and his administration, and to stop listening to President Trump.
How does that happen, though?
Whether one thinks it would be valuable to pursue such drastic action, or if it would be better to shift gears and essentially move to the Biden administration.
How does that happen, though? Because whatever happens in the next couple of days, I guess, you've still got somebody with a huge platform and an ability to whip up, you know, as we've seen yesterday, violent action as well through his words. What kind of ways can you diffuse a situation like that for a country that is at such an intense emotional point?
That's an excellent question, and I think that's where all of the media also has a part to play in this. They're another one of the institutions, a very valuable institution in American democracy to this point, that I think, while again one can understand the anger, now is the time for what I would call real journalism and thoughtful commentary. And I think exacerbating the hysteria levels on either side is not useful. In terms of Trump specifically, while many are arguing that it doesn't go far enough, he has been suspended from several of the major social media platforms. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't stop, as you note, his followers continuing to use it. I think there, and again, this won't happen in 2 weeks, this is a long-term process of reform, I think basic media literacy is going to be important, because while many of us may not agree with it, and what happened yesterday on the Capitol is just unacceptable legally and morally, there still, as you know, there are millions of Americans who firmly believe that the election was either rigged, stolen, or somehow fraudulent. Mm-hmm. To have that many people doubting the legitimacy of U.S. democracy, that goes far beyond Trump, I would argue. He exacerbates it, but it goes far beyond Trump. So there's no easy answer, but I do think we need a responsible media. I think we need serious commentary. I think the political bookmaking on all sides of the aisle has got to stop, and America needs to take a serious look at itself and begin to take its own democracy seriously again and stop treating it like it's a game or a movie.
Yeah, that's a really interesting observation. Just before we let you go, Amy, I wanted to know what your thoughts are around the role of law enforcement in this, because this has been a huge conversation, I mean, for decades in America, but in the last year with the Black Lives Matter protests, we've seen the violence that police has used against those, and then a very stark difference in the way that yesterday was handled. What do you think is a way forward? Because this is the institution that exists in America. What happens now? How do we change these systems?
Well, I do think, I think the criticism is valid, and that's an ongoing debate in the United States right now, the differences between both the media and the police responses to the summer of outrage versus what happened yesterday. I do think it's important to note that while they serve an important function, the Capitol Police are not quite the same as, you know, the police forces you might see on any random U.S. city. They did seem to be just overwhelmed with the number of people there. But I do take the criticism as well that they were ill-prepared, and there does seem to be a discrepancy between the, you know, counter-reaction to the protesters of the summer versus what seems to be a pretty easy capitulation yesterday. So getting back to your question, yes, that's another. I mean, America, in a sense, I guess the answer I would give to that has got to go back to first principles. And it has to have a serious discussion about what kind of society it wants to be. In a more immediate sense, I think there are gradations of views along the defunding the police lines. While I am not an advocate of completely abolishing the police force, I do think that the Biden administration quite probably will appoint people who realize that a strictly militarized force in a democratic society has got to be rethought. We do need several of the planks within the defund the police movement to heal the relationship between the police and communities.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Amy Fletcher, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Canterbury. We so appreciate your insights into this. And I know you're heading back to America soon. That must be quite an intense time to be moving back into it. So I hope that goes well for you.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for speaking with us this morning.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.